Hello, friends. Welcome to episode one of Christopher Chambers' new podcast and video show, Chris Chambers Noir. This also connects to his brand new website that features all of his books, and he has written so many amazing books and short stories, and he's been in compilations and Marvel stuff. We're going to get into all of that today. I'm Hope Katz-Gibbs, proud producer of this show on Incandescent Radio, Incandescent TV, and we also shout out on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Apple, of course, and YouTube. So Chris, welcome to your new show.
Thank you.
All right, let's just start. We're so happy that we're doing this with you. I'm so pleased that we created ChrisChambersNoir.com. You have written so many amazing books. So let's start by telling the audience a little bit about you, because you have a day job too. So maybe start there and then get into how you got into be a writer.
Well, it's kind of full circle. I'm actually, you know, an attorney, and back in the day of when Scott Turow and what's the name of the guy who wrote the Firm? The joke was on, you know, and this is going to date me right here, on the C drive, you know, so that should tell you how old I am. On the C drive of every lawyer's desk, there was a novel or a book of poetry or something like that, because they all wanted to do something else, but they were stuck doing that. But here I am full circle. I'm now general counsel to a big nonprofit that does student housing development, affordable student housing development. But I do a lot of other stuff too. I mean, I was teaching at Georgetown undergrad and law school. But I got, young people, whether they're kindergartners or college students, will drive you crazy. So I got out of that. I got out of that racket fast. I'm still a fellow at the International Conflict Resolution Center, although I cut back on that quite a bit, because the only thing more aggravating than kids are world leaders. So I've done a little of that too. I mean, we actually mediated a war, between Azerbaijan and Armenia, which was insane. That was a couple of years ago, and that was during COVID too. So that was you've got a couple of layers of craziness there. Talk about noir and blood. I'm doing that too, but I'm also, a writer. And, it's like, when do I sleep here? people ask me that question too. It's one of these things where I've always wanted to do this, since I was a kid. So this feeds, a need in me, that I've always had. And, you know, and the genre itself has fed that need, because I've always liked, everything from action, adventure, comic books, mystery, crime fiction, cop and robber type stuff, even when I was young, detectives. But I usually sided with the criminals, though. So I was always, pulled in by the darkness. So the anti-heroes were a little bit more my thing, but, so it's always been there. And maybe that's why I became a lawyer, because, lawyers really are kind of anti-heroes. If you think about it, they're never entirely good, even if they say they are. Mm-hmm. That's how I got kind of pulled into this.
That's awesome. So your first book, Sympathy for the Devil, was published on September 11th, 2001. First of all, tell us about the book, but holy moly, what crazy timing.
Well, that was my first foray into, trying to be, to be a writer. And I got very lucky, because, I was able to secure an agent and work on a manuscript, while I was, working full time as an attorney. And that was purely by, fate, God, you know, Shiva, Jesus, all that, you know, they giveth and they taketh away. So I was able to, you know, they giveth because I was able to get an agent and work on a manuscript, you know, in New, you know, a New York agent, all that kind of stuff. And then they taketh away, you know, the September 11th, you know, I mean, I was supposed to go and do a book launch. At that point, I was actually not in D.C. I was temporarily down in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I was scheduled to go to the Borders. You remember old Borders bookstore at Five World Trade a couple of days after that. And of course, Five World Trade didn't exist, you know, after that Tuesday. And you know, it's like the whole world, you know, just tumbled down literally. And, it was just surreal. As a matter of fact, you know, after all of that settled out, we had a DC, because even though I was in Charlotte, I still had, still based and had friends and family up here. We were going to have a DC launch. And that's when they had the I don't know whether it was ricin or whatever what that stuff was.
In the post office, yeah.
The post office. So, you know, it was like a double whammy. So I was like sitting around wondering, like, what had I done wrong in life? You know, and that book was, you know, and it was a hardcover thriller. For Random House, which, you know, for a debut writer, that was something. And for an African American too, that was a double feather in the cap. That was, you know, unheard of. Because at the time, I mean, all there really was, you know, Walter Mosley had made inroads there, and the only other African American writer that was really making splashes then you know, was, I mean, I guess it was, I guess it, you know, was Waiting to Exhale and stuff like that, you know, mm-hmm. You know, so, but in our genre, it was just basically just Walter, and Gary Phillips to some extent, was really doing the, you know, the outside detective fiction and stuff like that. And then thrillers, you know, there really wasn't anybody. And so, I mean, that really took a lot of wind out of my sails. So when I did the second one, which was the second, it was a two book deal, the second hardcover, A Prayer for Deliverance, that really, I mean, I was really kind of ambivalent. I was torn, you know, I mean, I really didn't, I was excited. And then, you know, then fate, you know, the day that came out was the second Gulf War started. You know, and we had our launch in D.C. At this big club down near the Marine Barracks on 8th Street the night that George W. Bush, and you know, announced the second war. So all the Marines, you know, they were clearing. I mean, it was surreal. So I really, you know, I wondered to myself, you know, what is going on here? I mean, should I stop? And to this day, I mean, it's really affected me. I don't know. Subconsciously, it's affected me. Consciously, I don't know. I mean, I do have kind of, it can either defeat you or it can push you. It can kick you in the rump. For me, it's been neither. It's kind of like something that kind of sits there behind you and haunts you. So it's always there. So it's neither bad nor good. So but it's always there. So it's something that I think about a lot. But I do use it as energy, whether it's negative energy or positive energy. It depends on the situation. Sometimes it's positive energy and it really motivates me. Sometimes it's negative energy and it kind of stretches things out. You know, and I sit there and wonder, you know, had I not let that affect me would I be bigger than I am now? Would I be, you know, would I have eclipsed some of the people who are my contemporaries? You know, would I have done this? Would I have done that? So it depends. You know, I'm a human being. And, you know, I have to be honest with myself about that. I mean, I think certain people aren't honest with themselves, but I'm a human being and I try to be honest with myself. And human beings have positive and negative moments. You have very dark moments. You have very light moments. And I think what I like to think of myself as a human, and I'm honest with myself, I have dark moments. I have light moments. And I think, that is what I pride myself on. And I think that's part of noir. I mean, noir is not total bleakness, but it is an admission that there are extreme depths and dark moments, but then there are moments when you can kind of claw your way out. It's not going to be all sunshine and lollipops, but at least there's going to be some kind of equilibrium when you do claw your way out.
Yeah, no, and it's amazing. It's amazing what you've done and what you've accomplished, even if that is somewhere that energy is hanging around you. So who knows? You know, there's always tomorrow. And seriously, what you've created since then. But before we move on to the other books, I want you to tell us about Special Agent Angela Bivens, who is the protagonist in both of these first books. Who is she? Where did she come from? And where did she end up going?
Well, you know, it's interesting. She came from my desire to show a young, strong black female protagonist. A lot of the stuff came from my aunt actually introduced me to Thomas Harris, who created Silence of the Lambs, which is an interesting kind of a, you know, thing, because the guy, he was this little kind of really fun, wonderful, pudgy guy. And you wonder where, you know, these ideas come from, because he creates Hannibal Lecter, but he also creates Clarice Starling. Now, she was not my Clarice Starling photocopy. I mean, I just want to put that on the record now, because she's not. And if you read the books, you'll see that. But at the same time, you know, this is around the time the book industry was starting to become so corporatized and consumed by the entertainment industry that, you know, that's what, you know, they mold into, because this is what this is, you know, because when you pitch this stuff, that is what you pitch it as. Well, she's a black Clarice Starling. Just because you pitch it as that doesn't mean that's what it is. So, and I think people in the industry understand that, and writers understand that. So when you say she's a black Clarice Starling, that's how you pitch it. But in the art form itself, and when you write it, that's not what it is. So, if you want to talk about it, that's how it was formed. But, you know, but she is a different kind of person. With a different kind of antagonist and a lot of different things happening to her and a different mold, you know, and narrative and kind of a, you know, different background that she's springing from. She was my first protagonist. So what I wanted to do, you know, when I jumped forward 20 years to Dickie Cornish, to this last book in this series, Streetwise, I actually wanted to bookend her, not just to show, you know, off my, you know, artistic journey, but just to show how, you know, human beings, you know, she's back in this, you know, and I have rights to the character, obviously, but to show how people change. 20 years later, she's no longer young and innocent and a neophyte and everything. Now she's almost an antagonist, because people do change. And this city of DC and noir itself does change people. Power changes people. So now she's 20 years older and an antagonist in a book with my new protagonist. So, you know, people don't always stay heroes. people don't always stay on the straight and narrow. People don't, you know, power changes people. This city of D.C. changes people. And, I wanted to show that those bookends where I start with her, and now here she is 20 years later, and she's a totally different person. And a lot of people have been following me since Sympathy for the Devil and A Prayer for Deliverance. I mean, a lot of people got really mad about that. As I say, you know, look, people change. I've changed. I mean, this is to show that too. You know, I wasn't the same person I was 20 years ago. Are you? You know, and some people get better, but a lot of people get worse.
Yeah.
I know people who were absolute horrors in high school or college, and they're wonderful people now. I know people who were wonderful people in high school and college and are absolute scumbags now. I mean, and so, you know, I mean, that is, you know, and that fits into the art form of noir also.
Yeah.
I don't think that's an issue. There are characters in noir who are cops, who are robbers, who are detectives, who are gunsels, who are femme fatales. There are femme fatales who were nuns in high schools and are hookers in noir stories. You know, there are people, you know, that's a trope that's gone back to Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett and Chester Hines. You know, but it was interesting to me, and it's something I felt I had to do to make things interesting. Trust me, I didn't, you know, it was a heavy decision for me because I liked her. She was my first protagonist. What else was I going to, you know, the worst thing I could have done was kill her off.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought about that in these Dickie Cornish books, but I said, you know, why would I do that? I'll make it interesting.
I love that.
Turn into an antagonist.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that. So you switched to a different series in October of 2022, or 2020. You published Scavenger and Mystery, and I'll just read a little bit about that. It's a lively but desperate world of D.C., where a lot of your books are all based here because you grew up here, and right, and I live here now, and this is where we met. So, you know, we have an affection for this town. In D.C.'s underbelly, a black homeless man must quickly learn the ropes of being a detective after a wealthy ex-government official sets him up to take the fall for a brutal crime he didn't commit. I love that story, and I want you to tell us all about Dickie Cornish, because in 2022, you published Standalone, and then this year you published Streetwise. So we're watching the evolution of this character. So two questions. Tell us about Dickie, and also tell us about, even deeper, the question would be, what goes on in a writer's mind? You know, so you've got these characters, they're very alive to you. They're, you know, like you and I are talking. It's there, and there's a picture of him on your website. I love that. You know, so they're real. They're very real, and they're going through the human evolution, like you said, sometimes to the better, sometimes for the worst. So tell us all about, first tell us about Dickie, and then tell us about what goes on in your mind.
Well, I had been toying with creating a really hard-boiled noir series for a while. And just to give context, because I have to give the context here, there was a time where the subgenre in mystery and crime fiction was really kind of bottoming out. You had the suspense thrillers, you had the cozies. Then there came the rise of the kind of domestic suspense, which was really aimed really hard for a female audience, more so than the cozies, because they were very, very hard edged. As female readers got more sophisticated and wanted harder stuff with a kind of a Hitchcockian sexual edge to it. More amateur sleuth, not female cops, not, you know, kind of hardcore, Olivia Benson types, or anything like that. And the hard boiled stuff kind of fell back. Some of it, you know, old school probably was a little too was sexist, you know. Maybe not Hammett and Chandler, but certainly Mickey Spillane and stuff like that. And then the neo noir, it was a little too gritty from the 70s and early 80s. But there was a resurgence in the 2000s with the website Thuglit, which was developed by Todd Robinson. And he brought along a lot of people, including Sean Cosby, S.A. Cosby, who was really setting the world on fire right now. But some people like Gar Anthony Haywood Gary Phillips, and then my mentor, George Pelicanos, who really just retooled the DC novel from the old crime novel paradigm, which was the Robert Ludlum political thriller, which was the thick, you know, hardcover of the 70s about killing the president, which was really, you know, and really retooled it to the old school about the streets kind of a hardcore crime novel. I really talked to him about what could we do about that, you know. The problem was, by the time I was rethinking this aspect, a lot of Washington had been gentrified, you know. So, you know, it's a little easy when it's Chicago or it's Brooklyn or it's, you know, the mean streets, you know, it's New Orleans or it's Miami, you know, there's certain. But with Washington, things had just changed. So I said to him, I said, well, you know, how much lower could we go here? And I said, you know, we're going to have to think of maybe a homeless guy, you know, and I said, yeah, I mean, a homeless guy. But we had to make him interesting. And a lot of homeless people or unhoused, they do have a story. People weren't born that way. I mean, there was a guy who went to law school at Harvard with the guy who's now the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and he was homeless. I mean, if all these people have stories, they were somebody once. I said, well, I'll make him somebody once, and he was turned out by somebody in school, and he became an addict and this and that and a drunk and this. And in order to make it really interesting in terms of the narrative, I wrote the whole book Scavenger in second person. Because if you aren't crazy initially on the street will make you crazy. The street will make you hear voices. And that voice of the narrative is really his father who had really abused him. So you have the narrative now written in second person. And I'll tell you, writing a whole novel in second person where it's not third person, he walked through the door, or first person, I walked through the door, but second person, you walked through the door. That's tough, okay? So you have a not very cool narrator there, okay? So it's all part of this formula to get you into that world. And so I pull you into that in Scavenger, and he is a scavenger. I mean, he has certain skills that these people that pull him off the street for whatever reason, and you have to read the book to find out what these specific reasons are. That's part of the mystery. Has so in the second book, you see him get help for these problems. So he loses some of these skills, these street skills. That he's sought out for, but he develops new ones, and you see the second person narrative drop to a more specific and more, detective trope first person narrative. So it's all part of the evolution. You know, so you see the character grow and change because, you know, I don't want him to be the same person. I don't want it to be the same book. So, you know, and that's how life is. And obviously this isn't real life, but he is sick. He is crazy. He is drunk. He is on smoking K2. He's drinking. He's on Xanax and stuff like that in the first book. He's hallucinating. By the second book, the second person narrative has dropped in parts and then gone altogether to a first person narrative because he's thinking clearly. He's gone to the VA now and getting meds. He now understands things. He's training now as a PI. So now he's dropped some of the street skills that he had before, but now he has more PI skills. And he can now, some of those skills maybe he has to go back to survive, but now he has new ones to cope. So by the third book, he's a lot more professional. And he does have to drop back to some of these other skills that he's maybe, you know, needs in the first two books. So, but this is how life works. You know, there's some, you learn things and maybe you have to drop back to some things that you have to drop, you know, you thought you didn't need before. And that's what that's the kind of stuff that I like, that I enjoy. I like to play with. But people change. Evolution isn't necessarily getting better. Evolution is changing to adapt to your environment. You know, it seems to be like you're getting better, but what it really means is that you're adapting so that you don't get wiped out. That's what evolution means. That's what Darwin says it means. It doesn't mean you get better or you get smarter. I mean, sometimes that's what it means, but it means you adapt and you change so you don't get wiped out.
So you don't get dead. Going,
you know, and that's what that's what's going on with him. Now, he is getting smarter, but the type of people he's hanging out with, type of people he's working for or dealing with on an everyday basis, I mean, they're criminals. I mean, and they're shortcuts. I mean, his PI license isn't exactly kosher. His gun license isn't exactly kosher, you know. But, you know, he adapts to that, and those shortcuts become legal and, you know, it's a process.
So, all right, so, this is amazing. All right, so let me, because we only have a certain amount of time, and I want to get to all our questions. So, all right, this is fascinating because I want to know how your brain works, because you're kind of living these parallel universes here on Earth, right? You're putting 2 feet, you know, 1 foot in front of the other. You get up, you go to work, you have breakfast, da da da. But yeah. Then you live in this alternative universe. So, so we met at Elaine's Literary Salon where Jeffrey James Higgins interviewed you. And then, so we had the privilege of meeting each other there. And he always asked the question, where does story come from? So I want you to answer that question today. And also, what's it like to live in your head?
Well, I think you just got an example there. There are pieces that are just there. And they just, I can't really answer that question. They're just in there. Mm-hmm. They, you know, I observe things. Some things I mimic, and then I adapt. Some things, it's a hard question to answer. I mean, all I can say is there's some things I'll see. You know, I'll see a bug crawling on the ground. And I'll say, okay, that makes an interesting story. And then the next day, I'll see a bug crawling on the ground, and I'll step on it. And the next day I'll see a bug crawling on the ground. I'll pick it up and I'll put it on the wall. I mean, it just depends. And then the next day I'll think about stepping on the bug and that'll be a story. Mm-hmm. I've always been able to compartmentalize that. I can come up with a very realistic, grounded kind of a story. Or I can think in terms of, you know, as you know, a story for Captain America.
Yeah, I want you to talk about that.
So, Black Panther.
Yeah, which is cool. And how did you get there? How did you get from these hardcore streetwise, you know, detectives and analysts to working with Marvel? Because you did your most recent Marvel work is with Captain America before you did Black Panther, Tales of Wakanda, which is amazing. So, all right, how did you get from one to the other, and what does it look like to work for Marvel?
Well, that actually is interesting. I mean, when I was doing Pulp and I was advising on storylines with some graphic novel companies. I mean, that was a little more freewheeling. With Marvel, though, it's very formulaic, which is good and bad. You have to really meet the canon, as they say, and the guidelines and the Bible, as they say. And I don't like doing that, as you can probably imagine. That's the only payoff is that you can hang your hat and say, well, I work for Marvel. But it is a grind for me to have to you know, because I like to be a square peg in the round hole, but they will hammer those hard edges off of you. But the payoff is to look back and say you did it, and also say that they saw something in you that to invite you to do it in the first place.
Yeah.
When you turn around and look back on what you've accomplished. I think that is the payoff. I think that it is also an affirmation that I do have a diversity of ideas and stories in me where I can come up with these kinds of things. I mean, I don't have the head for super fantasy and alternative stuff and alternative sci-fi and stuff like that. I think that my stories have always been kind of tend towards the crime and mystery and noir, but I can bend them. I think I have the talent to bend them enough to fit. If they are, you know, a comic book, close quote, canon, I can do that. But I mean, I do have that bend. But see, that's the thing. I think these people recognize that I bring that to the stories. So they're not going to ask me to come up with, something that's really hardcore sci-fi or really hardcore fantasy. You know, they know that. They know that I'm not going to come up with something about goblins and elves and something like that, you know, unless it's about elves that want to do a drive-by. but they recognize that I'll bring that element. The graphic novels and with Marvel and stuff, the analogy I can give you is that it is in the Departed. When Jack Nicholson was talking to Leonardo DiCaprio, and he was talking about John Lennon, and he said, you know, John Lennon said, look, if you give me a tuba, I'll get a tune out of it for you. It's like, you know, I can do that for you. That's the analogy I can give you.
I love it. Yeah, you make it work. You make it happen. It's perfect.
Yeah, I'll make it work.
All right. So two last questions for episode one, which is where I get to talk to you before we launch into your show where you're going to be interviewing people. So
right. The
question is, what's next? Do you have another series? And then I want to talk about the show.
Yeah. I'm working on a new manuscript featuring Dickie Cornish. Untitled, but I think it's tentatively going to be called Parasite Class, which is actually a term that Elon Musk came up with, and about with a meme that he actually has, but so he has no copyright right to it. I'm also working on a historical novel about the burning of Washington in 1814.
Oh, nice.
It's a new kind of thing for me. So that's going to be interesting. Yeah. I'm actually doing research on it now. And some people at the Navy Museum down in the Navy Yard are helping me with that. So that's enough to keep me occupied.
Yeah. Right there. It sounds like a good thing, especially for your wife. Who we will bring on to the show because she's amazing. I had the opportunity to meet her a few times. She's wonderful. Your whole family is. All right. So let's talk about Chris Chambers Noir, the show, the podcast and video show.
Right.
So tell us what we have planned. Tell us what you have planned.
Piggybacking on the, you know, social and everything from the social and literary and political issues about those, you know, working on those two books. Elon's meme and working on that, the background of that, of that book, the second book, historically what happened there. A lot of people don't realize that, we weren't big and bad as we thought we were. Somebody walked up here and burned the city down right from under our noses.
Yep. And that famous story about the picture of George Washington, Dolly Madison taken out of the White House.
Ran everybody off of at Bladensburg too. But then there was heroism 30 miles up the Baltimore Washington Parkway. There's that. There's the neighborhoods that I write about in my novels. There's a lot of change going on there. There's a lot of change in the present book I'm writing now about the stadium. We'll see whether the Commanders actually come back here or not. We can talk.
Or they're becoming the Redskins again. So we're going to bring on guests.
Become the Redskins. Yeah.
Crazy times here in Washington, July 2025. Yeah. So we're going to bring on guests and you're going to talk about all of this. And that's what the show is going to be. It's going to be an evolution, I think. I hope that's what I'm looking forward to as the producer, so that we can turn the tables and the writer can ask the questions of different guests. So I'm really excited, bringing in the noir and what that means.
That's the beautiful thing, and other noir writers. The beautiful thing about them is because we look at the bleaker side, they aren't necessarily bleaker people. I mean, they have a very, very good eye for things. They're not pie in the sky or they're not bleak people. I mean, they have a very good eye for a lot of different things. And that's why they're very interesting as guests, because they'll give very, very cool, thoughtful answers to things. And that's why it's I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, me too. That's so cool. Yeah. And you never know who you're going to meet, right? And who's going to share with you some, or what's going on in someone's head and heart.
That's the great thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But not too crazy though. I don't know if I want to get that many poets on, because that something weird might actually spring out of somebody's forehead.
We'll keep it under control. We'll just stay on this side.
Yes.
All right. Christopher Chambers, thank you so much. Our audience, thank you for listening to episode one. Chris Chambers Noir is our new show on Incandescent Radio and Incandescent TV. And please check out chrischambersnoir.com, his new website that we had the privilege of creating here at Incandescent, where it has all of his books. You can read about them. You can read about his background, and you can click to buy the books, which are definitely worth the purchase. So thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
All right. We'll look forward to seeing you all in episode two. My pleasure. All right. We'll see you soon. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs. Proud to be here. We'll see you guys.